I'm Gary Shapiro. Welcome to the From the Bookshelf podcast. Today, my guest is Bonnie McBird. Bonnie McBird is a screenwriter, an educator, an actress, a novelist, and her latest project is a new Sherlock Holmes novel called Art in the Blood. Bonnie McBird, welcome to From the Bookshelf.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
So there's more to this book than the book. There's like, tell us a little bit about that. There's a website.
Sure. I was inspired by my friend Les Klinger, who's a very famous Sherlockian, to do annotations to this book, historical annotations. The story takes place in 1888. And so I did a lot of research for this, and I did annotations that are up on my website, which is www.macbird.com, and they talk about all of the little various places and people and things that come up in the story. And then I also did a set of illustrations for the book, and I was inspired by Sidney Paget, who did the original Strand illustrations, or most of the originals. And so there's a series of black and white illustrations that I painted for the book, and also on my website.
So you did the artwork as well?
I did.
And so why not just put them in the book?
There is a special edition, which is put out by Otto Penzler, the Mysterious Press, and available through his shop, the Mysterious Bookshop in New York. The HarperCollins decided to not put them out in the mainstream edition, though.
Well, I miss them. No, but I went and I looked at your thing, and it's great.
Well, thank you. But they're accessible to anybody, and they're easily found.
Yeah. Bonnie McBird, you've written a lot of things, you know, including the film Tron, which is, you know, one of our favorites. And I really enjoyed Art in the Blood. But let me ask you, the character of Sherlock Holmes, he's like all over the place in recent years, not only in the two television series, Elementary and Sherlock, and in the films with Robert Downey Jr., but also, you know, like House is Sherlock Holmes.
Yes, definitely.
And The Mentalist is Sherlock Holmes.
Yes.
So why not write an original novel with your own character instead of writing a Sherlock Holmes novel? Why Holmes?
Well, that's definitely in the pipeline. But the reason I did this particular story was there are several reasons, actually. One is that it was my first, it was actually my second novel, but the first time I sat down to really set out to do an exact, something I had in my head before I started, I guess, is that I had a vision of this. And I realized that it was going to take at least a year or two to see that vision through. And I thought, who do I actually want to spend time with? You know, I really want to spend time with Sherlock Holmes and John Watson because I love them. But the second reason is more of an artistic reason, and that is that I've been writing for a long, long time. I've come up with lots of original characters. But Arthur Conan Doyle is a particular favorite of mine. And I kind of idolize him as a writer. He's kind of a genius, frankly. And there's something to be said for emulating somebody you admire that much. In terms of just for an artistic goal, it's a very challenging thing to do. It's sort of hubris in a way, because I think he's so, so good. So to attempt to emulate him in that way is, you know, it's a little silly. But on the other hand, from an artistic standpoint, it's a high challenge indeed. It took everything I had, so I like that as a challenge.
Well, not everything, because there's another Sherlock Holmes novel. I mean, there's a little preview of it in Art in the Blood, so you're already on your next one.
Yes, HarperCollins was very happy with the first and its reception as well. So Art in the Blood is the first of a trilogy. The second one is in work now. It's called Unquiet Spirits, and it's about the whiskey business and ghosts in Scotland.
Now, have you read other Sherlock Holmes novels that were not written by Conan Doyle? There's been quite a few.
I have, although once I started working on my own, I stopped reading any such novels because I didn't want to sort of contaminate the voice that was in my head. I kept rereading Conan Doyle for the rhythms and the vocabulary and the feel of it, and I didn't want to contaminate that vision with hearing other people's emulations at that point. But sure, there have been a number of them, and some of them have been quite good.
Well, I think it maybe the acknowledgments in the book led me to believe, and also just reading the book, you're as influenced by recent incarnations of Sherlock Holmes, at least partially, as much as Conan Doyle? I mean, the actors who have played him and so forth.
No, I wouldn't say that, actually. I'm not as influenced by the recent versions as I am by Conan Doyle. Absolutely not, actually.
Uh-huh.
I'm primarily influenced by Conan Doyle, and I was emulating Conan Doyle. What I actually meant, and maybe I think some people have misinterpreted that.
Yeah.
What I meant was that, you know, there have been some fabulous actors portraying this over the years, and when I write, I've always done this for screenwriting and novel writing. I mean, I really see and hear the story in my head. It's like a movie is playing in my head. And so sometimes I would find that the voice of Sherlock Holmes might be a voice of Benedict Cumberbatch or Jeremy Brett, for example. But that doesn't mean those incarnations were the influence for the writing of the book. However, I will say this. I did take one small bit of inspiration from BBC Sherlock, which I just love so much. I've loved
sure.
all of these,
so great. Yeah.
But especially The Granada with Jeremy Brett and BBC. But also, I actually quite liked Robert Downey Jr. also. But for the BBC thing, the thing that I did kind of take from them or borrow from them is the notion of this great animosity between Mycroft and Sherlock, which I think has tremendous story juice. And it's hinted at, but it's not really in canon. They're competitive a bit in canon. They're definitely two very, very different people. And in that way, it's similar. But there's not quite the animosity that there is in my book, for example. And I just really enjoyed that aspect. But otherwise, frankly, I was really inspired by Conan Doyle. And when people draw parallels to my work and, say, BBC Sherlock, I think it's because they're both emulating the same original source.
So not so much Basil Rathbone and Nigel Bruce. Those actors don't speak to you as much.
Well, I saw those growing up. I grew up watching those black and white films on TV, and I loved the Sherlock. But Nigel Bruce's Watson was not true to canon, and I never felt while reading Conan Doyle that Watson was a bumbling character. He's actually a an army surgeon. He's an army hero. He's a wounded veteran. He's kind of, as they've described him in BBC Sherlock, an adrenaline junkie, and he very much is in the canon as well. He's got a knowledge of women on three continents. He's, he's a very adventurous man. So no, I never really saw Nigel Bruce. No.
Not accurate.
Well, he's certainly not my Watson.
Although, probably more people, definitely more people have seen Basil Rathbone and Nigel Bruce than ever read any Conan Doyle books, probably.
Sherlock Holmes is the most famous and popular fictional character of all time by various measurements. And I think that a lot of people actually did grow up reading these as kids, or at least read one or two. They're pretty, classic in that sense. But wherever you came from, whatever your entry point, into the Holmes canon, the Holmes world, I think there are some key things that are always the same, and those are the essential aspects of Sherlock Holmes.
We're talking with Bonnie McBride. She's an author, a screenwriter, and her new novel is called Art in the Blood, and it is a Sherlock Holmes adventure. You said that you think Holmes is the most popular fictional character of all time. Do you think he's the greatest fictional character of all time?
He might be. I mean, the enduring quality of this character and the amount of the inspiration he's done for so many artists, so many fans over the years. He's certainly one of the most popular and I think influential characters. He's in some ways the first superhero because he has superpowers. he doesn't climb up walls, although he kind of does in a couple of things, but he doesn't have any magical powers. He doesn't have any extraordinary things in that sense. However, he does have the superpower of this mind, this incredible mind. And yet he's also got, and he's got a sidekick, and he also has his kryptonite, his Achilles heel. He's got some weaknesses. And of course that's what you need for a fully rounded, interesting character. So he's got all the elements. Also, Conan Doyle, by creating his short stories for The Strand, he created the episodic storytelling genre. It didn't really exist before Conan Doyle did that. And what he did was he kept bringing back the same character and in a new story. So you did, it wasn't a serialized story. Prior to that, they'd been serialized stories. And so you didn't have to have just read the one the month before or 2 months before to know the one you're reading now. It was just a completely brand new story. So that episodic form of telling stories was new and probably also helped. So he's not only launched the superhero thing, but he also launched episodic storytelling.
Well, Bonnie McBird, do you think you might take a crack at, would you be tempted to write a Tarzan story or a Superman story?
No, probably not, because those aren't my heroes. Sherlock Holmes, I'm a person who's really attracted to smart, brainy people, and so smart is my superpower of choice. And I'm married, to a computer scientist, just to...
I thought you were going to say you were married to a superhero, but that's...
I am married to a superhero. I think he is, you know, but that's a little biased. But yeah, smart is my drug of choice here. And I also love how complex he is. And one of the things I wanted to examine in Art in the Blood was the sort of the subtext of the artistic temperament. Because Holmes is definitely not only a scientist, but he's an artist. It's mentioned a million times in the original canon, and it's clear because he sees things that other people do not see. He sees pattern where other people can't see it. He's emotional. He's emotionally sort of labile and kind of changeable, and he's somewhat vulnerable in this. He's vulnerable to depression. That's when he takes cocaine. He plays music to kind of soothe himself. And so he's got, in many ways, what we call the classic artistic temperament. And so I thought it would be kind of fun in my book to sort of look at the Janus-faced gift that is, you know, sort of that you have these kind of superpowers of the artist, seeing and perceiving, but then you also have this sort of vulnerability of this emotional up and down and et cetera, sort of the lonely artist figure. So that was kind of a fun thing. I wanted to put that in kind of as a subtext, and that's why Art in the Blood. Art in the Blood, by the way, is a quote from the Greek Interpreter by Conan Doyle, and in it, Holmes is describing the way he got his superpowers, in a way, to John Watson. He says, Art in the Blood is liable to take the strangest forms. And what he's referring to is the fact that both he and Mycroft have this uncanny ability to see, and so they, you know, they inherited that from their grandmother, who is the sister of the artist Vernet, and Vernet is a real artist, of course, a real person, and so this is, in other words, he's describing that he inherited these characteristics and this temperament. So I thought, well, what does it mean to have art in the blood? You know, what does that give you? You know, it gives you great stuff, but it also makes you kind of vulnerable.
Well, of course, I want to avoid spoilers, but you mentioned real people and artists, and there are some real people and artists who make an appearance in Art in the Blood. What made you decide to do that?
Well, Conan Doyle did not do that very often. He did it just a few times throughout canon, and usually not as a main character on stage, so to speak. But I decided there's really only one real person in Art in the Blood, and that is Lautrec, Toulouse Lautrec, as it comes in briefly. And I happen to know quite a bit about that artist, and I thought that there's an interesting parallel here because he was quite a genius and also was very debilitated by his drug taking. And that is not, I want to say right off the bat, that is not a big factor in Sherlock Holmes in my book. He's not like, you know, he does take drugs, and it does have a, you know, bad effect in him, but he's not, that's not the theme of this book. However, there's a parallel between Lautrec and Holmes in that both of them lived with their best friend was a doctor who lived with them and basically tried to keep them from their excesses, but also partied a lot with them. So there's this funny, weird connection between the two. Henri Bourges, that's the other real character. The man who lives with Lautrec is actually a real person. Then there's another character in the book named Vidocq. And Vidocq, there was a real Vidocq, but he lived quite a few years before the time of this story. He was a very famous Frenchman who started as a crook and then ended up being a policeman and founded the Sûreté, and he was known for his cataloging of criminals and their methods and so forth. So he actually, many people say he was the father of forensic science. So he was a very interesting guy, and there's a character in Art and the Blood who claims to be the great-grandson of this man. Of course, he's kind of not, he's kind of making this up. And he's a bit of a charlatan, but he's a charmer. So there's only two real people in this story.
Well, I'm hoping there's going to be you're going to take more, you're going to have Toulouse-Lautrec have his own series. He's going to be...
That'd be fun.
The little painter detective.
Yeah.
That'd be... The unknown, detective life of Toulouse-Lautrec.
Yeah, it'd be fun.
Well, there are some aspects of this story that probably wouldn't have been included in a Conan Doyle story. They might have been hinted at. But do you think Conan Doyle would approve?
Yes, I do, actually. Because the elements in my story, a couple people have commented on that, thinking that, there's an imperiled child in my story. And also there's a sub-story of children who are mistreated in a factory situation. That wouldn't be that really that out of the question for Conan Doyle at all. There's quite a bit of violence. There's quite a bit of terror. There are imperiled women and children in his books. I don't want to really go into the full thing with that because it would be a spoiler there, but I can say that the well-being of children was a very, very important theme in Victorian times, in Victorian London, and it had come into prominence sort of along with the Industrial Revolution. People were realizing that children were being abused and used in the factories and in mines particularly. And there's a great deal of violence and lack of caring for children that was being fought. And all kinds of institutions were being formed to rehabilitate them or to take them away from these situations. So, in fact, it isn't really... There's quite a bit that was very much in the Victorian sensibility that, we think of them as stuffy and we don't mention these things. But, in fact, that's not really the case.
Well, I really enjoyed Art and the Blood. Tell us one more time where we can find the website with all of the annotations.
Sure. The annotations and the illustrations are available for Art and the Blood on my website, which is my name, www.macbird, M-A-C-B-I-R-D, just like a bird that flies, macbird.com. And they're up there, and I would be delighted if people check them out. They're actually a lot of fun, especially if you enjoy historical fiction. This takes place in 1888. By the way, the boys are in their mid-30s, so they're pretty young.
That's right. You have Watson at age 35, right?
Yeah, they're young, and they're relatively new in their partnership.
And is that going to be the case in your next book, too?
Yes, the next book takes place a year later. Unquiet Spirits takes place in 1889, the winter of 1889. One of the things they did was, there are people who have done chronologies of the canon of Arthur Conan Doyle's works, chronologies in the sense of the Holmes chronology, like when each case took place, supposedly. And there are people who have painstakingly put this together. So I took one of those. You have to pick one because they don't all agree. And I inserted my cases at times when there weren't other cases going on. And in fact, the Unquiet Spirits takes place shortly after Hound of the Baskervilles, which is interesting because, of course, Hound of the Baskervilles is probably the most famous Holmes story, and it has to do with a supernatural seeming horrific hound that kills people. So this question of are there supernatural beings will come up and be relevant to what they've just done.
Well, I hope you'll come back and talk to us again when that book comes out. It's a pleasure talking to you. The book is called Art in the Blood, and the author, my guest, Bonnie McBird. Thanks so much for being with us on From the Bookshelf.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Oh, that that's it for this week's From the Bookshelf podcast. I hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll come back and hear us again next week. You can catch the show live every Monday night at 7 on KSCO in Santa Cruz, California. I want to thank my guest, Bonnie McBird. Her new book is a Sherlock Holmes adventure called Art in the Blood. From the Bookshelf is produced by Francis Venegas. I'm Gary Shapiro. We'll see you next time.